One day, each time you do this exercise, pick up the practice pack of cigarettes. Now, pick it up now. Now, looking at the picture, beat out the I will not smoke rhythm. Are you ready? Thank you.
what you say. There doesn't seem to be anybody else who agrees with me.
Do you believe what you say? Motionless we, nothing is real. Wasting my time in the waiting line. Do you believe in what you say?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you please take your seats, we're about to begin our program. We have the chairman of ICANN board, Peter Dengate Thrush.
Hi. Thank you. Can I have some sound here, please? Thank you. Sounds like it's coming through. Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you very much for coming to the session, which, as you can see, very well attended and a very interesting topic. We have been waiting for the scribes to arrive because we do want a record of the discussion, including your questions at the end and the answers given to those. While we're waiting for the scribes, though, the session is being recorded by MP3, so we will capture it all. And just before we begin, what's usually described as a housekeeping matter, but which is in this case something slightly more serious. I just need to remind people at about this stage in the meeting of the ICANN Code of Conduct for Meeting Behaviour. So if you'll just bear with me for a moment, and it has nothing to do with this particular session. It actually relates to an incident, unfortunately, at the end of the last session. So I thought it was obviously time to remind people who know and perhaps inform people who haven't been to an ICANN meeting before that we actually have some rules for participants and attendees at an ICANN conference as to how to behave. So just running through that very quickly, we encourage participants to communicate with respect. Now, we clearly have people all over the ICANN organisation and attending with widely differing views. That's the fun of the place. people with diametrically opposed views coming from very different cultures and very different views on life. What we need to do is make sure that as we communicate with each other, whatever the disagreement, that we do so with respect. And part of that communication process is listening carefully to others in order to understand their perspectives. It also means that we have to take responsibility for our words and our actions. We're all grown-ups. We all here for the same thing, to improve the policy-making processes of ICANN and to participate and to strengthen the internet. So one of the suggestions we have really is to keep criticism constructive. Note that we don't ban criticism. In fact, we encourage it. But to be helpful, it has to be constructive. And finally, please respect the diversity and be tolerant of the differences of others. So just if we could just remember that for the rest of the week, and we may have to refresh it again. Let me come then to this session. One of the issues in relation to new GTLDs has been a developing discussion about the respective rights between registries and registrars. And we've started with a number of arguments, a number of positions, and a number of versions of the guidebook have come out dealing with this. What we thought would be a good way of helping you and the protagonists and the parties get some grip on this is to actually stage something that looks a little bit like a debate. And what that's going to involve is parties who tend to represent clearly defined but different views. Now, there are a lot of different views. This is not intended to encompass all of the views on this particular debate. But what we've done, with apologies to those others of you who also have views, is take people who've been quite constructive in putting together clearly defined but very different views as to how the relationships between registries and registrars and affiliates of both should operate in relation to the selling of new GTLDs. So, very briefly, we started this in about November 2007 when, at a meeting on the GNSA recommendations, a number of these different viewpoints were raised, and ICANN committed to undertaking a study of the registry-registrar separation requirements. And as a result of that, one of the Charles River Associates reports was published, making a number of recommendations. And since then, the discussion has taken off. So let me introduce, the way we're going to operate today is that Brian Cute is going to begin presenting for about 10 or 12 minutes a summary of the case for this particular viewpoint. And then there'll be a response from Richard Tindall, who's going to represent a different view for about 10 or 12 minutes. And then the parties, and this is all being done very cooperatively, we've agreed what some of the key points of difference are that will be helpful to get out and discuss. And then Richard is going to go first on those, and there'll be a response, and then there's going to be another point from Brian and a response. So we've got 90 minutes. We think that that process is going to take about 60 to 65 minutes, leaving us 20 to 25 minutes for questions. So with no further ado, I'll ask Brian, who won the toss, to kick off. Brian.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks, everyone. Brian Cute with Affilius, here to present our position, an overview at the outset, as Peter said. So first, as always, what's the issue we're talking about? And the issue we're talking about is vertical separation of registry and registrar functions. The four questions as we see them that need to be addressed are: should a registry be allowed to act as a registrar for its own TLD? There has been a consistent prohibition against a registry acting as a registrar on its own TLD in ICANN contracts since its inception. Second question: should we reverse ICANN's decade-long policy on use of registry data by affiliated registrars? Third question: has ICANN conducted adequate analysis and review of the benefits and harms from a reversal of this policy? And lastly, has ICANN followed its own processes for reversing the policy? Next slide, please. So what is our position? And mainly Affilius has been advocating alongside with the New Star and PIR, but many of my comments today are going to be consistent with the registry supermajority position that was communicated to ICANN. So our position is that the existing policy that prohibits the use of registry data by an affiliated registrar should be maintained, and that to implement and enforce this policy, registries, back-end registry operators, and their affiliates should not distribute domain names in their own TLDs. That is, continue the longstanding policy in effect. Our position also accommodates a couple of exceptions. We noted with interest the findings of the Cray report. We think the Cray report pointed to a couple of specific examples. One was called a single registrant TLD, and the other community-based TLD, where given the contours of a particular TLD model, ICANN could certainly proceed with vertical integration because the potential harms for the registrants in those TLD are minimized by the nature of the model. So what is ICANN's policy? This has been a question of much debate between us. We had a session last Monday where Richard and I went back and forth on the contours of the policy. The policy simply is that the revenues and assets of a registry should not be used to advantage an affiliated registrar or to disadvantage a non-affiliated registrar. This policy has been in force since ICANN's inception. This is not an ownership limitation issue. There's been much confusion on that. We are not talking about ownership from our side of the fence. As long as this policy is continued, the prohibition of selling in your own TLD, then we're fine with cross-ownership, full reciprocal cross-ownership between registries and registrars. And the other question is, what are the enforcement mechanisms? Well, ICANN's used a number of enforcement mechanisms over time to enforce this long-standing policy. A few of them are listed here: equivalent access and non-discrimination requirements, complex codes of conduct, audits, certification, and sanction programs, as well as equivalent access requirements and ownership caps. So the question in front of us is, what is ICANN's goal? Is ICANN's goal to change this policy? That means they would then permit use of registry assets and revenues to advantage affiliated registrars. ICANN's hired economists to look at some of these questions, and ICANN's economists have said that if you want to capture the efficiencies of vertical integration, you must eliminate cross-ownership limits, and you should eliminate equivalent access requirements as well. This is, in theory, about economic efficiencies. Or should ICANN's goal here be to change the enforcement mechanism? So on the table is the elimination of cross-ownership. As I've said, we agree. It's not about ownership. But what else is needed if you eliminate cross-ownership to continue to protect registrants and registrars from abuses of data commingling? ENOM's proposal is simply remove the prohibition on distributing names in your own TLD, full stop. The registry supermajority position, on the other hand, as I said the way forward is to continue the prohibition on selling in your own TLD. This affords protections against abuses of data. And what are these abuses of data? Well, just to describe the game at a general level, at a high level, how is this game played where registry and registrar data can be commingled and used to the detriment of registrars and registrants? Generically speaking, if you go to the next... I jumped one ahead. So what are the real risks of data commingling? First, the integrated registry and registrar has an incentive to discriminate against unaffiliated registrars. That's by the nature of the combination. They also have an incentive to engage in insider training and use of the data. They get access to sensitive registry data regarding lookups and traffic that increase the risk of abuse and increase domain name prices. Over the last 6 weeks, we conducted a survey of 59 small to mid-sized registrars, and 59 represents roughly 20% of the registrar families out there, registrars from around the world. Results showed that nearly 70% opposed the change in policy. Even more interestingly, over 80% of the surveyed registrars were very concerned about the preferential access to registry resources and misuse of confidential information. And we have a website, registryregistrarseparation.org, that we're going to be posting that survey result to. So now to the slide of how's the game played. The game, at a generic high level, is very simple. On the left-hand side, it's about identifying high-value domains and identifying them as cheaply as you can. Then take them out of circulation so they never return to the first-come, first-served registration marketplace. And then finally, auction them off or sell them at a premium in the aftermarket. Or, we've seen, keeping the domain for internal monetization over time, which is a form of warehousing, which is contrary to an ICANN policy. But this practice represents significant revenue for many registrars. So how do they do it? In the past, many of you in the room should be familiar with the practices of domain tasting and front running. There was much focus on domain tasting, and in fact, at the end of the day, ICANN adopted mechanisms to reduce domain name tasting, but essentially testing names out on the market to see if they'll get traffic, and then pulling them back out of circulation and auctioning them off at a multiple or selling them on the secondary market. Front running was another type of practice. Again, these are just specific practices of the overall general game of identifying high-value names and leveraging them for auction prices. Front running was identifying the interest in a name through queries, through lookups, check commands by potential registrants, and then taking that name out of circulation and making it uniquely available through a single registrar. If you want to read about more detailed concerns of registrar practices in the generic sense, Gandhi, a major registrar, issued a very interesting report that details some of these practices. But this effectively is at the core of the policy, or I should say, these are some of the practices that could be enhanced if the policy were to be changed, and I'll tell you why. A change in the policy will, on the one hand, provide for Enum, Richard's asking for this change, control of their own data and their competitors' TL data if they become an integrated registry and registrar with the ability to sell in their own name. And here are the facts. They will see all queries for those domain names, whether they're existing domain names or non-existing domain names. They will see the DNS traffic. They will know exactly when all the names will delete. In effect, by having access to this registry data, some of it which is unique and available only to the registry today, they will have an engine for jacking up their profit, for continuing this game of identifying high-value names and auctioning them off. Registrants, on the other hand, will lose. And how do they lose? If these practices proliferate in the marketplace, they're disadvantaged. The domain names that they may be looking for are not available or in the system, so there's a scarcity of names. And at the end of the day, they end up paying a higher price through the auction market, through front-running practices. A registrant who would otherwise go as a first-come, first-served registrant to a registrar and get a name for $6 to $10 a year now has to pay a multiple of that. And importantly, because we think this issue is twofold, it's about do we change the fundamental longstanding policy, but also the enforcement mechanisms. What are those mechanisms? If we don't have mechanisms in place that capture these behaviors in a timely fashion, the registrant loses, the industry loses. We saw with tasting, by the time we got around to addressing tasting, most, if not all, of the high-value names had been taken out of the system. So whatever the path is forward, the enforcement mechanism needs to be able to detect in a timely fashion these types of practices so that we can address them and preserve the benefits of the market for the registrant. So to clarify our position, I stated the registry constituency supermajority position. We believe it should be a bottom-up approach in terms of addressing this policy change. We believe it should be based on evidence that builds up to facts and then allow you to draw your own conclusions. Richard's side, Enum's side, that's not a registrar constituency position as far as we know. It has been promoted by just a handful of large registrars, as our survey shows. It has been, in our view, a top-down process that has been supported by incomplete economic analysis and supported by self-interest. And as I wrap up here, in terms of a fact-based approach to this analysis and a bottom-up approach, here's what we think are, in our view, facts versus myth and spin. What's Enum been saying on this issue? Well, the myth and the spin of it is they're saying this is about whether a registry should be allowed to own a registrar. That's not the case. Ownership's not a problem. Enforcement mechanisms prohibiting the sale in TLD is the core of this policy that needs to go forward. Or otherwise said, can a manufacturer own one of the retail stores that it sells computers through? We support permitting cross-ownership. This debate is not about ownership. It's about control and separation of functions. Enum has also been saying that what we are requesting is not a change in ICANN policy. And Richard has said, just give us the 2001 contracts. That worked well with no abuses. There was a golden age of registrations. Well, the fact of the matter is that ICANN policy has consistently worked to constrain data sharing and mitigate abuse of data sharing between registries and registrars. And during that time period, There was a code of conduct that required and enforced the policy against data sharing and abuse. The policy has been consistent. The enforcement mechanisms have changed over time. And finally, ask yourself, what is the motivation? Why? And yes, this slide is not an indication that we were hurriedly putting this thing together at the last minute with the cutoff sentences, but registries could benefit from the proposal that Richard is putting on the table. Certainly, integrated registry registrar where you could sell your own TLD, that could be very interesting to a registry like Afilias and others. What we're concerned about is the practices that will proliferate in the marketplace. What we're concerned about is the quality of the registrant experience. What we're concerned about is the quality of the industry in the long-term health of the industry. We are completely supportive of the new round. We have a large back-end business ourselves at Afilias. This is something we find very interesting. However, this is an important point in terms of protecting registrants in the industry. So what is their motivation? Well, on the one hand, with their registry registrar hat on, they would get to sell direct. But with ENOM's registrar hat on, they get to maintain equal access and non-discrimination obligations that are imposed on registries. In effect, they're asking to get to have their cake and eat it too, at the detriment of the registrants. Thank you.
Brian, thank you very much for that. Thank you particularly for the clarity and the brevity of what are some very complex arguments. I found that very helpful. Richard, you get an approximately equal time now to make your case and explain your position. Go ahead.
Thanks, Peter. So can you hear me okay? Great. So, yes, I'm Richard Tindall, and I'll be presenting the case for a registry owning a registrar in its own TLD. Let me try to describe what this debate is about. To simplify terminology, let's call registries producers and registrars retail stores. What we're debating is, should a producer be allowed to own one of the retail stores that sells its product to the public? When a producer can own a retail store, it's called vertical integration. An example of this is, I'll make an example of this using Apple Computer. Apple Inc. produces computers and sells them through hundreds of retail stores like Staples, Amazon, Costco, and your neighborhood computer store. They also sell Apple products through their own Apple retail stores. And so the question that we're debating today is, should Apple be allowed to also use its own retail store to sell its product, or should Apple be forced to sell its products only through other people's stores? That, in a nutshell, is the question that's on the table. Let's look quickly at the current model for TLDs. The purple, whatever that shape is, up the top left-hand corner, that's a back-end provider, a back-end technical registry provider, and it's interfacing to the green round shape, which is the registry. I've called it .xyz registry here. And a registry may or may not have a technical back-end provider like that as a separate entity. Maybe the registry performs its own technical function. So those two things could be part of the one entity, or there could be a separate technical provider. And the registry provides names to a number of registrars. In this example, I've got five registrars. And so all of these registrars interface to the registry. Some of those registrars, for example, Registrar 2 here, has a reseller model. So Registrar 2, in fact, sells names through a reseller. The reseller may well bundle the domain names with other products and sell them to consumers. But in all cases, the registrars, whether they go direct to the consumer or through a reseller, to the registrant or consumer. Let me talk about where we all agree in this debate. These are points where there's no disagreement between Brian and myself. First of all, we're agreeing that the model that I just went through will not be changed. So that model, neither of us are proposing to change that model. We're also agreeing that the registry cannot sell directly to registrant. And so the entity that holds the contract to operate the registry, we're agreeing that that entity will not sell directly to consumers. So in the model again, the green circle, that's the registry, is not selling directly to registrants. We're agreeing that there should be open access to all registrars. So in this model, there are five registrars who connect to the registry, and we're both agreeing if there was a sixth that they would be allowed to connect, and if there was a seventh and eighth, and if there were 500 registrars, all of them would be allowed to connect to our registry. Fourth, we're agreeing that there should be non-discriminatory treatment of all registrars. The registry, in green, again, must treat all five of these registrars in a completely equal and non-discriminatory fashion. And then finally, number five, we're both agreeing that the registry can own a part of a registrar in its TLD. We're both agreeing, for example, that registrar four in the blue box, that the registry circle in green, we're both agreeing that the registry can own part of that registrar in blue. There's no disagreement on any of those points that I have just discussed. So what is the difference in our positions? The difference is 2%. Their position is that the registry must own 49% or less of a registrar in that TLD, and our position is that the registry can choose to own 51% or more of a registrar in that TLD. I'm going to pause on that slide for a moment because this is a very, very important point that I want to emphasise. This is the essential difference between our proposal and the registry constituency supermajority position. This slide is the essential difference between those two positions. So what does that difference mean in practice? And I'm guessing that people are having a little trouble reading what's in the blue box there. Would that be a fair assessment? Can people read the blue box? Oh, okay. So you can see I've got in there that in this scenario now, we're both agreeing that we can own part of Registrar 4 in blue. Their position is the top one, which is 49% or less of that registrar. Our position is the bottom one. We're saying if the registry wants to, it can own 51% or more. So we're asking for vertical integration so a registry can control, in other words, own 51% or more of a registrar that sells names in that TLD. Unless, and this is a very important caveat, unless the registry has market power, let me rephrase that, unless the registry-registrar combination has market power, or unless the registry is price capped. Let me also emphasize the notion of price capped. We're saying that if a registry has its price capped, that many of the things that we're asking for are inappropriate and that controls need to be in place. But as I'll discuss shortly, when the registry is not price capped, as none of the new TLDs will be, then these concerns are not valid. So are we asking for something new? No, we're not. The provision that we're asking for, vertical integration, was explicitly in the following contracts. 2001 to 2006 BIS, 2003 to 2006 ORG, 2001 to 2006 INFO, the very contract that Afilias launched their TLD and operated under for 6 years, contains the exact provisions that we're asking for. Brian has talked to a range of safeguards which are in that contract, and they are acceptable to us. And as you can see, there are a range of other contracts in which this concept of vertical integration, in which the registry could own more than 51% of a registrar, that provision was in a number of ICANN contracts over a long period of time. Millions of names were registered during this period. So it's a long-standing and a consistent position of ICANN in these contracts that the sort of vertical integration that we're asking for is permissible. Let me read from the info agreement, the 2001 info agreement. Section 3.5 talks about the treatment of registrars. This also shall not preclude an affiliate of registry operator, affiliate being an entity owned by the same shareholders as the registry. This shall also not preclude an affiliate of registry operator from acting as a registrar with respect to the registry TLD. As I mentioned, the contract also contained safeguards. Let me go back to some of those safeguards. The contract contains these sorts of safeguards, which are acceptable to us. Let's talk about ICANN's policy position. This is what ICANN said about vertical integration in 2001. This reflects, I've provided the link here, this reflects ICANN's belief that there is little, if any, competitive value under today's market circumstances in forbidding the registry operator from also being a registrar, from owning a registrar, so long as it is done in such a way as to not discriminate against other competitive registrars. There's a long and deep history of registry contracts with vertical integration. Have we seen problems with these registries? Have we seen abuse of registrants? Have we seen predatory pricing? Have we seen misuse of data? Have we seen discrimination against other registrars? In all eight of those contracts, for all of those years, for all of those millions of names, did we see these things happen? I believe the answer is that we did not. Is this model that we're proposing for our domain industry unusual in other industries? No, vertical integration is the norm in almost every other industry. The producers of medical equipment, software, televisions, toothpaste, and thousands of other products are allowed to own a store that sells their product directly to consumers. Typically, these producers also sell through independent retail stores because that helps them sell more product. We don't give this sort of vertical integration a second thought with other industries. In fact, we would typically think it odd if a producer of a product in another industry was not allowed to sell directly. We would view that as the exception rather than the norm. It's less common in our industry because our industry is evolving from markets with monopoly suppliers and price caps. So there have been some controls on the producers in our industry also owning a retail store. But there have also been many contracts with no such controls. Let me give an example of another industry using the same chart that I used for the domain industry. Hopefully you can read this one as well. And so in this case, our registry is Apple Inc., who are a producer of laptops like the MacBook. Apple sells, the Apple registry producer in this case sells MacBooks through Staples, through Amazon, through Costco, they sell through their own retail stores, and they sell through neighborhood computer stores and hundreds of others. And the same sort of model flows through. So how does vertical integration benefit consumers? ICANN has commissioned economic reports and competitive experts. And the vast majority of economic literature and experience indicates that vertical integration benefits consumers in the following ways. Price. When a producer owns a retail store, there's greater distribution efficiency and greater competition, both of which benefit consumers through lower prices. With vertical integration, there is typically more innovation. Producers who own a retail store are more likely to innovate these new services as they have more control over the delivery of those services. If you don't have a retail store where you can provide a new service, you have to persuade other store operators to incorporate the service, which they may or may not view as something that they want to provide. Service and safety. Manufacturers, producers, tend to be more interested, in our view, in the value and safety of their brand and their product than other parties. For example, Apple probably cares more about the perceived value and safety of the Apple MacBook than Costco does. This is not to say that Costco doesn't care at all about the safety and value of the MacBook. We just think that the Apple Store is going to provide more safety and more value wherever it can to consumers for its own product. Let me restate the caveat that is so important to this entire debate. If there's market power, or if there are price caps involved, then all of these potential advantages are at risk. The argument for vertical integration is not as powerful if there is market power or a price cap situation. And so why has this become an issue of debate in ICANN now? We've had years of vertical integration, as I've discussed in those eight contracts, with no problems. What's the pushback now? And the answer is that we're competing for back-end registry deals today. Let me give an example. Let's say Network Solutions, NSI, is competing with Neustar to get a back-end registry deal with a party who planned to apply for .movie. So NSI is competing for the back-end registry operator deal, and so is Neustar, to this party who intend to apply for .movie. If Brian's plan for vertical separation becomes policy, the movie people, the movie applicant, know that selecting NSI as their back-end registry provider would mean that movie names cannot be sold through NSI, the registrar. NSI is a great registrar, and the movie people know that. The movie people really want to have their names sold by NSI as a registrar. So the movie TLD applicant is not incented in this case to select NSI as their registry back-end operator, because by doing so would eliminate an important retail distribution channel for .movie. Brian explained some of the claims, and we're going to be debating those interactively in a minute. These are the sorts of words that are being tossed around, that the registry will discriminate against unaffiliated registrars, that data will be commingled, that there will be misuse of data, there will be insider trading, that there will be misuse of traffic and lookups. And we're going to go through each of these in a very careful way in a minute. And these are the questions I think we should ask for every one of these allegations of misuse.
Richard, you're just about, you're up to equal time with Brian now, so.
Yeah, it's my last slide. Sort of. For every claim, let's look at the following questions. What is the specific allegation being made against the registry, the potential allegation of misuse? How would the registry do what's being alleged? Why would the registry do what's being alleged? Could this misuse, and I'd like to emphasise this one, could this misuse occur with or without vertical integration? Did this misuse happen when BizInfoOrg, Pro Museum, Aero Co-op, etc., had vertical integration contracts? And finally, does this sort of misuse happen in other industries where there is already vertical integration? And in the interest of fairness, Peter, I'll just cut off there. That is my last slide, but let's go to the questions.
Thanks, Richard. Well, we've got more to go before we get to questions. Well, that's, ladies and gentlemen, you've now sort of heard a summary of the case, if you like, for both of the parties. Thank you. And Richard, let me thank you also for the clarity of your presentation. I think people, as we get into this, people begin to understand how complex it really is. What we're now going to do, the parties have agreed that there are three or four key issues that they want to take in some greater depth. And reversing the order, Richard gets to go first. And Richard, as I understand, the first one is really a discussion about what is the current policy and what might the history of that policy be. So would you like to kick off on that?
Yes. Yeah, so the policy with respect to vertical integration has been mixed. There have been some contracts that have allowed what we're asking for. I listed those in one of the slides, and there are other contracts that have not. In fact, the .com contract for many years, in fact, allowed vertical integration. And so there's been a mixture of contracts. I think, from my point of view, the telling part of this entire discussion of what's policy is where has the policy come from with respect to separation? And the answer is it's come from the dot-com contract. As with many things that we do in this industry, the rules that we set up for registries and registrars have been driven by the legacy monopoly situation of dot-com. And so, in fact, some of those contracts that I cited have, in fact, returned to a situation, they launched with vertical integration. Some of them have reverted to a separation of ownership. But the reason that that happened is because that is what was put in the dot-com contract in 2006. And so, from our point of view, the policy has been driven by what's been happening in dot-com. And in our view, we think it's inappropriate and bad policy to set up the sort of rules in a small, new starting registry that you would encumber a monopoly operator with 80 million plus names. We don't think it's appropriate to have the same sets of rules apply to new registries that you would apply to something like .com. The analogy I would use is to say that we tend to treat Mary's Corner Store as a registry with the same set of rules that we might want to have in place for Walmart.
Okay, thanks for that. Brian, your turn. Your view of the current policy and perhaps how we got here.
Well, I'm not sure if you're calling me Mary's Corner Store, if I should be offended or go ask to get my price caps removed, Richard, but thank you for the characterization. Yeah, I think there's a distinction here. There's a distinction between policy, and as I said in my presentation, the policy against the mingling of data for the obvious potential abuses and harms to both competition registrars on the one hand and then the pricing shenanigans that happen in the marketplace on the other has been consistent through time. The policy has been consistent through time. The enforcement mechanisms have varied. And Richard's quite right. There has been some impact from the VeriSign and NetSol agreement way back when, and that was a question that came up on Monday that was a bit of a stumper. But in fact, one of the reasons the numeric ownership caps didn't show up until the 2005 contracts is because the NetSol VeriSign spinoff had not been sorted out effectively, and so there was an inability to come up with a number. But the fact we're talking about enforcement mechanisms is what we're talking about, and what should they be going forward? We say that the prohibition on selling in your own TLD is the one consistent enforcement mechanism that has worked quite well, very well, as Richard attests. You haven't seen the kinds of abuses from registries who have been constrained from selling in their own TLD. We think that that's also easier to enforce. If Richard is really arguing for going back to the days of, the murkiness of the VeriSign and NetSol spinoff and onerous codes of conduct and ICANN running enforcement proceedings that have $10,000 or $100,000 penalties attached and a sanctions program, we don't think that's the way forward. We don't think that's the best way forward for ICANN or the community.
And a quick response.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I'm Mary Store, by the way. I'm Mary. So, we're not asking to go back to murkiness, and we're not going to complexity. We would like to go to the contract you had. I have it here. It's fairly straightforward and it's fairly simple. It says that I can own, that I, the registry, can control and own a registrar in my TLD. That's what your contract said. It also has some safeguards. We like those safeguards. We'd be happy to take this contract and launch tomorrow.
Okay. Brian, why don't you take the next one, which is, what is your proposed model trying to achieve? What really are the impacts for registrants if you get your way?
Well, I think other than what we said in the slides, I think going forward, the continuation of the prohibition is important because it, again, it's easy to enforce. The slides we put up about abuse are things that we feel very strongly about. And something that should be appreciated is that as a registry with relationships with registrars, that's a bit of a sensitive topic. And I've done my best to talk about it in generic terms. But the fact of the matter is, whenever you combine a wholesaler and a retailer in this sense that's going to have access to this type of data, some of it which is unique to the registry, there are incentives that are created to cheat. Incentives that are created to identify high-value domains and take them out of the system. Again, I think our foremost point is that we look at the new TLD round as a registry operator with back-end services as a very unique, important opportunity, a business opportunity for us. And as you know, Afilias is both a registry operator for info and a back-end services provider. But we also have a unique interest, and I think we all do, in the quality of the marketplace that evolves from here. The introduction of competition is going to be wonderful. We welcome it. But the impact on the registrants is key. And registrants, at the end of the day, are going to tell us whether or not this was a success. And they're going to do that by how they're treated in the marketplace by the sales channels.
Okay. Richard, you didn't really answer the question that Brian posed about the enforcement costs. If you go to that contract that you're waiving, Brian says that the only way that worked was very onerous enforcement mechanisms with high costs. Do you have a response to that?
I don't believe that's true. I was in the industry then. I had one of those contracts. I don't believe there were onerous costs on me as an operator of one of those contracts. So I don't think there was a lot of cost or time on ICANN's part. Those registries behaved well and acted well because they were in a competitive marketplace. They didn't have market power, and so they weren't able to do the sorts of abuses for which we have set up rules to protect ourselves from potential, not actual, I'm saying, from potential misuse of a player with market power. So in my view, there were not strong enforcement costs, and there will not be with new TLDs. If a new TLD reaches the position where it achieves some sort of market power, then by all means, let's bring in these sorts of enforcements and controls. But let's understand what market power means. We can't have 100 TLDs with market power. If we have one or potentially more new TLDs with market power, by definition, this also means that .com has lost its market power. So we're really only talking about controlling a handful, potentially, of TLDs that have this sort of market power. In my view, the enforcement mechanisms and effort to control genuinely competitive TLDs is relatively low.
Thank you, Richard. Brian, you posed as the worst example of the harm that would be caused, the risk of data commingling, the insider trading, the ability to look up all the traffic and then misuse that and the monetization. Is there any evidence of that occurring under the previous regime? And if so, if it didn't, what stopped it?
Well, you'd have to look where there were integrated structures. And for the large registries that we're talking about, that we didn't own registrars back then, so there wasn't the opportunity. And to the costs of enforcement, you know, Neustar, where Richard worked, didn't own a registrar, so there were no costs. With VeriSign owned a registrar, had there been any issues there, the costs would have been huge, potentially for VeriSign and both for ICANN in enforcing and going through the procedures to enforce. So I think there's a clear distinction there that makes sense.
Okay, let's go to the last one of the sort of... Richard, you want to respond? Sure.
I wanted to talk about the data issue. Are we going to continue with that one, or are you moving on?
Carry on.
Yeah. So, and could you put my slides back on? Is that possible? I'd like to talk about this issue of data misuse, because I'd really like to drill down on what it is we're talking about. And before I do that, let me move to one of my slides. It's coming up?
Yes.
Yep, there we go. Okay, so let's talk about this data misuse issue, because it's been tossed around a lot. And when we start to dig into it, I think the allegations start to evaporate. First of all, what data are we talking about here? We're not talking about registrant data. Registrant data, who is data, is public. Everyone has access to that data. Everyone in this room has access to registrant data. So we're not talking about some special access or misuse of that data. Transaction data, the number of ads, deletes, transfers, renews, etc. We're not talking about that data either. That data is also public. Many companies run sites that can give you detailed statistics on registrar activity for each of those forms of transaction on a TLD basis. So that data is readily available to the public as well. DNS lookup, DNS traffic data, lookup data. A registry sees at a maximum 20% of DNS lookups due to the distributed nature of the DNS. And so a registry only sees a small portion of actual queries for registered names. So let's look at this model I had before, and let's take the scenario where, in fact, none of these registrars are owned in any way by the registry. They're all completely independent registrars, all five of them here. So number four is independent from the green registry. So the registry, to whatever extent that registry is seeing data, and Brian mentioned lookup, query data, so a check command for a name, is this name available? The registry checks, the registrar checks the registry, is this particular name available? They may not register it right now, the registry sees that. So that is a form of data that the registry sees. To the extent that any of this data is available to a registry, the issue of vertical integration is irrelevant. If a registry that is not price capped, as all new registries will not be, if a registry sees some of that data from all of these registrars that it could use, for example, to raise prices, it may well do so. The issue of whether that registry owns a registrar or not is entirely irrelevant to how it may or may not use that data. Every registry today sees the sorts of data that we're talking about here. So to the extent that they may misuse that data in some way, it's happening today. The addition of that registry owning a registrar in no way adds any additional ability to misuse that data.
Okay, thank you. Brian, what do you say about that? It's obviously not WHOA's data or traffic data because, as Richard says, that's available. So it is check data.
Yeah,
the
no,
registries
no.
are already seeing that and no. could be misusing it now. What do you say to that?
Sorry, Peter. Sorry, I mean to interrupt. No, the point is the registrars today don't see the entire universe of data. They don't see all of the lookups from all of the registrars, all the check commands for available and unavailable names. They don't see the ones that are queried the most, which names are queried the most in that TLD. So, no, they don't see the entire universe, and I would replace Richard's "they may take advantage of the data" with "some will," without a doubt. And it's not about ownership again. I don't know why we spend time on the ownership question. It's about prohibiting the registry from selling in its own TLD, and we believe that that is the enforcement mechanism which addresses the problem. And I'll also add, there has been some have suggested that registrars in the new round may get together or aggregate, try to get access to the entire universe of registry data, and then couple it and combine it and share it in something of a data sharing club, and that's likely to happen. We've heard that scenario. We would say that, first of all, is that behavior that ICANN should be encouraging? Is that behavior that we all should be encouraging? What might be the legal issues around sharing that type of data? We think this will happen, and we're not saying that all registrars were doing it, but we say it will, and there are simple mechanisms to address it.
Peter, can I respond? Brian, can I just let me take Brian back, because you actually answered that question as if it was about a registrar seeing all the data, but Richard was actually saying the registry already sees that data and could already use that in an uncapped environment to put up its prices or misuse it, and don't seem to be doing that. You responded in relation to a registrar.
I was thinking the new TLD round for a new integrated registry and registrar.
Richard says that a registry owning a registrar makes no difference to its potential ability to misuse that traffic, that check data. Why aren't registries
Except
doing
that? We're not selling direct in our own names. We don't own registrars. We don't have the sales channel. Perhaps I'm missing the thrust of the question.
No, I think that's it. You wanted to respond.
Just to add, I mean, the concern being expressed is that the registry will exploit that data to increase the price in some way. My simple point is that the registry, an unprice-capped registry, can do that whether it owns a registrar or not. And so will registries do that? Separate question from the whole debate about vertical integration. In my view, it's not going to happen very much because TLDs are going to be competitive. If I've got my .charity TLD and I think they're worth $8 per name. I'm going to be competing with other TLDs in the marketplace, and should I see data as a registry that induces me to increase price in some way? You know, I guess that's called supply and demand. Maybe if I see a huge amount of interest in Dot Charity, I'm going to raise the price from $8 to $10. But again, the issue of whether or not I own a registrar has no bearing on my ability as a registree to increase the price.
Okay. Let's move to two last quick questions. Brian, what's the worst aspect of their proposal?
Hopefully not me.
I think the core of it is the access to data and the potential risk to the registrant. Full stop. I mean, right. We're on the cusp of changing the policy, establishing new rules, providing access. You know, we created the grace period and didn't anticipate tasting, but it happened.
Yep.
And we had to address it at the end of the day. And we feel strongly that timely detection of these types of behaviors are important to ICANN. ICANN has an enforcement job to do, and it's a difficult enforcement job. We think making it more complex and not establishing mechanisms that provide ICANN with early detection is really not the smart way to go.
So you think there'd be a lot more enforcement and checking and reinforcement work that ICANN would have to do to police this new market?
Well, yes, and also maybe the inability to detect in time or detect at all.
Okay. Well, same question to you, Richard. What's the worst thing about their proposal?
I think the worst thing about their proposal is the notion that we're going to try and hobble new, small, highly competitive little TLDs with a set of rules that we design for a huge market leader. And so my great concern is that we're going to hobble the potential competitiveness of new TLDs by putting rules on them that we really designed for the giant. We have tended to do that in the past with new TLDs, and I believe that's one of the reasons why we haven't seen as much success with the previous round of new TLDs as we hoped for. Let's not make the same mistake with this round of TLDs. Let's allow these new TLDs to compete openly in a competitive market. And if some of them happen to get the sort of power and market share that may concern us, then let's introduce rules then. But let's not put the rules before, let's not put the cart before the horse in terms of encumbering these small competitive TLDs with a set of rules that we designed for .com.
Okay. So let's see if we can't move a little closer than the worst of each other's proposals. What compromise might there be between your position and Brian's position? And Brian, I'm coming to you with the same question in a minute. Richard, what possible compromise is there between these two positions?
Brian could give in.
Brian could what?
He could give in.
Brian, have you got an equally helpful compromise to suggest?
I thought we vetted that one last night, Peter.
Let me try another one. I think a very sensible and well-thought-through compromise was put on the table in March of this year at a discussion forum we had on this issue. We've been debating this issue for about almost 12 months now. A very effective compromise was put on the table, which would limit the ability of a registry-owned registrar to sell names at a certain threshold, which was 100,000 names. So the point being with that proposal would be that if a new TLD took off and was hugely successful, let's say it had 1 million names, hugely successful new TLD with 1 million names, the registry-owned registrar in that TLD would in fact be limited to just 10% of those names. So that was a compromise position, a cautious position that was put forward. We endorsed that position 10 months ago. The debate has since then opened up again, but I believe that compromise is worthy of looking at again.
Brian, compromise?
No, that's not a compromise position. Allowing registry to sell direct up to 100,000 names is a change of policy. It's allowing to sell direct. Let's be clear. And let's also be clear that there's a lot of valuable names in that first 100,000, as we know from experience. And allowing the unfettered ability to sell direct in an environment where there'd be an incentive to basically cream skim goes to the concerns that we've mentioned here. So that we don't see as a compromise. I mean, I'm encouraged to see, on the one hand, Richard saying, you know, the policy was consistent, he'd be okay with the prohibition going forward. but I'm discouraged by the notion of, you know, going back to the days of onerous codes of conduct and enforcement challenges that existed in the NetSol and VeriSign arena.
Okay, so if 100,000 doesn't work, would 98,000 or 52,000? Is there a number somewhere that that would work? I know you chaps have battered these numbers around.
Well, I mean, there are some precedent. For example, I think Dot Museum had a 5,000 ceiling. I mean, there is some precedent out there. And again, you know, that I think that went to the nature of the TLD. And I think the Cray report provided some good guidance here that depending on the structure of the model, you can allow some type of integration because the risks aren't so high. And I think that's where we should focus.
Okay.
Peter, a quick comment, if I could.
One quick one. Then we're going to throw the question to the floor.
Just a point of clarification. In the museum contract, there was an unlimited ability of the registry-owned registrar to sell names. There was no 100,000 limit. There was no 20 million name limit. The 5,000 names that Brian's referring to was names that the registry was allowed to own for itself, to register for itself. Okay. A registrar that the registry owned could sell an unlimited number of names in that contract, InfoBiz, name, co-op, etc.
Okay, thanks for that.
Peter.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've heard the kind of problem that the board faces. Carefully articulated, clever, committed, passionate people putting forward contradictory positions. So welcome to life on the board and welcome to life at ICANN. And, of course, what happens in this process is the staff is charged with digesting this and presenting a recommendation to the board. Welcome to their nightmare. They can never get that right. One side, or even usually both sides, are depressed, feel repressed and discouraged. So you see how hard it is. We've got a whole variety of positions. We've got allegations that there should be no rules, suggestions that we need new rules, suggestions that we go back to old rules. The board has to wonder, is past conduct of legacy operators any guide to the conduct of future operators? What is market power? How would we recognise it? How often would we have to check? Can we afford it? What does that do to the prices? And if we move ahead and we get it wrong, you know, are we letting a genie out that we can ever get back in the bottle? So let's have some questions. What I really want to hear from is people who are not connected to either of these parties. Now, we're not going to do passport checks. I'm really looking for independent views on this. Let's start with a microphone on the Amadeo. Welcome to the debate.
Hello. Well, I have some opinions, but first I wanted to explain something about the theory, then give a historical example of mine, how I approach that in different situations. First, about everything hard, everything holds, everything is true. But there's something about what Richard said that bothered me. Look, vertical integration at very least has an increase of prices, a certain rigidity of prices with a slight, not very significant increase of prices. That's a fact, except for that minority of U.S. economists, which are a minority within the economic theory, economic thinking in the United States, that became the majority of the U.S. antitrust thinking, the Chicago School. But outside of that wall, everybody else agrees. But that's marginal. The real problem here is that the caveat you made is the real important thing. This works if not only there is not market power, this works, vertical integration is good in general, if there is a high cross elasticity of demand. And that's the real important thing, not supply, demand. That is, if the consumers perceive those goods offered in different vertical integrated channels as highly interchangeable, I would submit that this is not exactly the case in the TLD space, in the DNS. Registries are convinced that they compete one against each other. The consumers are much less convinced that the registries compete or the products compete. To take your example...
Amadeo, sorry, I'm just going to have to
just
suggest that we have time constraints.
Sure.
There are 14 people already in the queue.
If I
gave you 2 minutes each, we would run out of time.
Okay.
So you've all got less than 2 minutes. Carry
okay, on. That's okay. Perfect. Let's imagine the dot movie example you gave. If I don't like the prices or the services of that vertical integrated system, I will not move to dot shop in Chinese, to dot museum, or to dot cat because of that. because meaning has an importance that is probably higher than the price and the services. That is no perfect competition. .com competes probably with all the others. All the others don't compete one against each other perfectly. It's very imperfect competition. Secondly, once I have registered, I am somehow locked to that registry if I am using my domain for the usual purposes, not just for, you know, speculation, so to speak. That is, it's not true that from the demand side that there is high elasticity, and therefore there is not true that there is no market power from that perspective. Therefore, your argument has to be taken with certain care. Now, the second example...
Amadeo, yes? I'm sorry, I'm going to have to stop you. I said 2 minutes and you've had four already, and that's going to...
Half of that was discussing with you.
How you use your time is up to you. Let's come to this, and please keep it brief. There are lots of opportunities. I don't really want people coming forward and reading statements into the record. I really welcome questions of the panellists. Sir.
Jeff Schmidt, you'll be happy to know I don't have any relationship with either of these folks. I am here today only as a wannabe economist. So regarding vertical integration, there's two ways to implement vertical integration, through ownership, but also through contracting relationships. In this case, everything that I've heard here with respect to use of data and such seems to be a code of conduct issue much more than an ownership issue. So my question to both panelists is the ownership issue a red herring in this situation? Is it much more a code of conflict or a code of conduct situation, not an ownership situation? Are we focusing on the wrong thing?
Can you give a quick answer?
Yes, it is a red herring issue. It's not about ownership, and it's not code of conduct as the enforcement mechanism from our perspective. It's the prohibition on selling in your own TLD.
Okay. Richard, is it a red herring?
That was a pretty fast exchange for me. I mean, I'm still processing, but I'm not an economist. All I'm saying is if I own the registry, I want to be able to distribute names, whether that's through an ownership relationship where I own a registrar, or it's through some contracted relationship, which is the alternative that you suggested. I'm fine with that.
Okay.
So we want the ability to distribute names from our registry.
Got it. Let's go to this back to the microphone.
Yeah, I really think we need to bring some context to this. And what we're trying to do here is introduce new TLDs for both competition and innovation in the namespace. So I think there's two misstatements that Brian's made that I want to put out, and then two small questions for Brian. First, that you know this is always what the policy's been. I think we always have to take, as Richard said, the policy in context. We have a policy that of separation that was made in the context of .com. It's a very specific market. This is a fundamentally different construct. And the second is around the threat of a small TLD cream skimming. In this new space, if there is a small TLD, 5, 10, 20,000 names, that doesn't cream skim, they will be broke, I would put out to you. They better be, and that'll be part of the innovation that we'll see in the namespace, and there's nothing at all wrong with that. The two questions I have for you, Brian. First, you know, it seems to me that this enforcement thing goes both ways. Enforcing 49% ownership restriction is going to be incredibly difficult as well for both ICANN and everybody else involved. And piercing the corporate veil may in fact be significantly more difficult than enforcing some separation and equal access requirements. So my question for you is, you know, how would you address that when, you know, especially when we've seen ownership games played all over the place, both in this space and others? The second is, you know, boy, if I was Richard, I wouldn't have talked about compromise at 100,000. I talked about compromise at 1 million because I can't imagine where the data value comes. Data value comes from scarcity in a namespace, where the data value comes from only 100,000. I would ask you, at what level do you really believe that there's value in that data for the purpose of this abuse of the end user that you're describing? Thanks.
Yeah, I think, again, the answer is, and I know Richard's harped on this time and again, we don't view it as ownership being the enforcement mechanism. We don't.
Sorry, I wasn't clear. How would ICANN enforce that the 51% that was owned in your sort of acceptable position by somebody else wasn't indirectly controlled by the registry?
Well, it's not just about ownership. It's about control. I mean, it could be something other than a percentage of share ownership of an entity. And that's important because if you're going to have the prohibition going forward, you want to be careful for back doors, and you have to be able to address that issue.
That's
enough on that one.
Your point is well taken.
We've got another one here. Let's go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll keep this very short. My name is Daniel Schindler. I speak in my personal capacity, but as the former CEO of Centralnic, I would like to give some practical feedback on this issue. By way of a short introduction and not advertisement, Centralnic is one of the world's oldest registries and provides back-end services for its own portfolio of domains as well as for other TLD operators. It currently has more than 2,000 registrars and resellers connected to the registry, as well as providing retail registrations through its own registrar. At no time during its 15-year history has this cross-ownership caused any problems. In fact, it has ensured extended choice and excellent customer service for its registrants. Consequently, and through specific experience in this area, I strongly advocate no cross-ownership limit is necessary for new GTLDs, and also because it allows smaller registries an opportunity to build out their offerings where other registrars may choose not to make the registries' names available.
Thank you very much. Very useful data to add to the debate. Thank you. Let's come back to this side.
Hi, Jason. My name is J. Scott Evans, and I'm from Yahoo, and I have to say that I think cross-ownership's a bad idea. I think data sharing's a bad idea. I was just in a meeting where we're talking about the fact that there's abuses in gaming going on with registrations not getting put back into the system. And that's problematic. We developed the redemption grace period to sort of help that system, but what's happening now is they just don't delete the names. They just keep the valuable names themselves. And so now we've already got an identified problem where there's an abuse of the system taking place, and I just see this as another way of making it easier for abuse to take place. This vertical integration that all I am is Apple selling my computers at the store breaks down because the reality is Richard's buying his own computers and monetizing his own computers. And if Apple was doing that and creating false scarcity and auctioning off their own computers, I think the U.S. government would have a big problem with vertical integration.
Thank you. So when we're talking about Apples, we're not really... So Apple Computers is not comparing apples with apples. Thank you. Big to be... Richard.
Yes, so...
Just quickly.
It will be quick. Yeah, always quick. So once again, I ask the question, why would a registry-owned registrar do more of that than a registrar who is not associated with the registry? What's the difference in being owned by the registry that makes you think that more of that's going to happen? Why would a registry take its own names out of circulation? It doesn't make sense to me. I don't see the logic of why there would be an economic incentive, for the registry to engage in that.
Point-per-click advertising is why they do it. And another issue, you said something, let me tell you something. Who is information also isn't publicly available to everyone unless you want to start sending me all your privacy registrations. You just send them on to my enforcement department. We'll be glad. It is not, all the data is not publicly available.
Okay. I can, without... It's a bit of cheer squad up there.
Some privacy experts in the room. Let's go to...
I did have a response again, very briefly, if I could. I mean,
sorry.
This is a very important point, and it's hard to understand because it is complex. I can do exactly what you're suggesting with a registrar that's not affiliated with me. If I want to go and get every name in my TLD as a registry, I'm going to set the price of them all at $1 million. I'm going to go to an unaffiliated registrar, and I'm going to do a deal with them where they have a 5-cent margin on those names, and I'm going to buy the name from that registrar. No one else is. It's going to cost me 5 cents per name because the million comes back to me, and I'm going to do it. Whether or not I have my own registrar doesn't stop that behavior. If we're concerned about that sort of behavior, let's look at that, the warehousing of names. My point is that the issue of vertical integration is separate to the issue that you're discussing.
Yeah. Thank you. Mr. Pelage, welcome to the microphone.
Thank you, Peter. Mike Pelage. First, I'd like to thank both yourself and ICANN for this innovative format. I think it's a positive, as I think most of the people would agree.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Uh, I'd also like to thank ICANN for last week holding a webinar on this very same topic where there were other aspects, it was just not this black and white, there were other shades of gray that were presented last week. So my question here is, we've had competing debates of who's right. My question to the panelist is, what happens if you're wrong and there is harm? What happens if you're wrong and there's potential harm? So to Richard, you first, you're wrong. Your Mary registry turns into the evil Walmart empire and begins to harm registrants. What is the consequence? And Brian, you're going to be up next.
Thank you, Mike. Richard?
Yeah, okay. So my macro response to that is if a registry assumes market power, which is what we're talking about, then there are national laws that will kick in to address that sort of situation. I don't think it's ICANN's charter nor its expertise to be acting as a competition regulator in that sense. However, I would add on the table 6 to 9 months ago would adequately, the 100,000 limit would adequately address the concern that you've expressed.
Thank you. Brian, the question is, what happens if you hold all new registries to Walmart standards, prevent innovation and potential choice?
If we're wrong, then I guess the rules and the enforcement mechanisms that we're proposing are applied to all players in the new TLD round. And, you know, contrary to what Richard said, they're on the record as being interested in bidding for .web, and we're not talking in every case about small new registries that we don't want to hobble. But we also believe that what we're putting forward creates more of an even playing field from a regulatory and enforcement standpoint for all the players. And what Richard is putting forward is what we view as asymmetrical regulation. And if you're going to put asymmetrical regulation into play for different parties in the marketplace, you have to have a rational basis. You have to have fundamental economic study and review and analysis of the impacts.
Mr. Chairman, just a point. 30 seconds. We've been participating in ICANN for over 11 years, and we've been trying to advance the private sector leadership. I think what's very interesting with Richard's response is that if ICANN gets it wrong, governments are going to have to come in and get it right. I don't think we've invested 11 years with the affirmation of commitments of trying to, again, advance the private sector leadership model upon which ICANN is founded. Because once governments come in, when we drop the ball, I don't know if they're necessarily going to leave.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Ms. Burr.
My name's Becky Burr. For full disclosure purposes, I represent a variety of registries, including on this issue. We've learned in this week, or at least I learned in this week only, that that Richard's proposal included this code of conduct, sanctions, limitation on self-dealing and information commingling. That's very surprising to me because we heard the economists in Sydney say to us that absent dominance in the upstream or the downstream market, vertical efficiency, vertical integration is good because it produces efficiencies and allows things to be cheaper and more innovative. What Richard's saying, if I understand him right, and I believe I do, is he doesn't want to get any of those efficiencies. He doesn't want to take advantage of the efficiencies, the ability to use the data to do all of those things. He is just really changing enforcement mechanisms, not policies. That is the assertion that I hear. And I guess my question is, if that's right, if we are not talking about achieving the economic efficiencies of vertical integration, then what we are talking about is what enforcement mechanism is simplest and easiest for ICANN to enforce.
Yeah, so we're talking about some safeguard. Let's put some of them on the table. I mean, they're not that complicated. There should be separate sets of books. If the registry owns a registrar, there should be a separate set of accounting books. That the profits, if you like, of the registry can't be used to support the registrar. So these aren't particularly complex safeguards, nor are they ones that disturb us. We simply want the ability to be able, for registries, new registries, to be able to distribute their product. So I don't think that those sorts of safeguards are going to eradicate all of the efficiencies and benefits of vertical integration. They are a little onerous if they're what's necessary to get this policy movement the way we want it to go, then, you know, we're going to go with them. But I don't think they don't remove the benefits of vertical integration.
Could I just, I just have to say, the chief efficiency is the information sharing. That's what you've said will forswear. If you want to do true vertical integration, then you ought to, then you have to be thinking about why we even have this equivalent access provision in the contracts. And I haven't heard that on the table.
I don't know what information we're talking about here. It's that the majority of information that the registry sees is public data. What information are we talking about?
I think Brian went through
right,
the information.
That. Okay, let's go to Professor Mueller. Welcome.
Milton Mueller, non-commercial users constituency. By the way, I hope this debate doesn't preclude the one we have scheduled in our constituency day meeting. You're not completely sick of this by then.
You will be tomorrow, Milton.
We make it fun.
So my question, and it is a question, remarkably, is how would the public interest be harmed if we proceeded with the new GTLD round under current policy and practices regarding contracts, vertical separation, et cetera, and initiated a PDP that resolved these issues systematically in a year or two using the mighty GNSO?
Well, I think part of the problem is we're not quite sure what you mean by existing policy, but let me not try and answer the question. Well, you've just had a turn. Brian, can you answer the professor's question?
Yeah,
what harm would be done if we started under some current system and changed this at a slower pace?
Well, we don't think the public interest would be harmed if the policy were continued and applied to back-end registry services provider. That's our flat answer to your question. We think registrants continue to be protected. You have competition. You have lower prices. We think that all the benefits are self-evident. We have had some concerns about the process.
A bit about the back-end, is that a change? Is that just a continuation of existing policy?
Well, our view is that applying the policy to back-ends, that policy already effectively has applied. If you look at the behavior it has applied to the back-end providers in the marketplace, if it were a question of implementation, we believe ICANN could address it as a question of implementation. We think there's plenty of precedence for that. But the question of process is a valid one, Milton, and we've had our own concerns that we've put on the record about how the process has been conducted to date.
Quick shot from here.
Your turn.
So let's be clear. The proposal that comes from the registry constituencies is more restrictive rules than currently apply to .com. The back-end provision does not apply currently. The prohibition against resellers does not apply currently. Their proposal would put significantly greater constraints on a new small registry than we currently impose on .com. And so to answer your question, the public harm will be, in our view, that new TLDs will be far less able to compete with these rules.
Okay. Thank you, Milton. Good question. Keith, I'm not sure I regard you as independent on this. Are you prepared to declare an affiliation?
Absolutely.
And Becky was.
Now, Keith Drazik with Newstar. Obviously have a strong opinion on this, and we've been working together with Afilias and PIR on the issue. When talking about the issues of economic efficiency in the marketplace, which is really what ICANN's contracted economists have said is a critical consideration, that economic efficiency in the marketplace produces benefit to the consumer. There are differences in how, the registries are currently required to provide service on an equitable basis to registrars, to all ICANN accredited registrars. The reverse is not true. In the CentralNIC example, they were not an ICANN accredited registry. It was not an ICANN accredited TLD. They were not required to provide equal access to a sales channel of registrars. Going back to the Apple example, Apple is not required by a regulator or a governing body to sell through a particular set of resellers. They have the ability to pick and choose resellers and to treat those resellers differently. And there is an economic benefit, economic efficiency to that. So my question is, if we're going to a vertically integrated marketplace, should that go both ways? And for new TLDs, if it comes down to a new TLD, if our goal is to make sure that the new TLD registries are successful in the marketplace, have access to consumers, should a vertically integrated registry and registrar be required to offer all new TLDs?
Okay. Richard?
No. I think not. I think we're talking about putting more and more layers and layers of rules about the marketplace. The marketplace, absent market power, tends to work. Apple doesn't have to sell its product through other sellers. If we were to accept the arguments that I'm hearing here, it would be absolutely in Apple's interest to not sell its product through Staples and Costco and whatever. It sounds to me like if Apple could only sold through its own store, that somehow it could magically raise the price of MacBook and it could somehow dominate the market. You're exactly right. Apple doesn't have to use those other channels, but it does. The same way that all registries are going to want all registrars to sell their product, not just their own, because registrars add value.
Okay,
just real briefly. I think the key here is that Apple is able to pick and choose among its resellers. They are not instructed or required contractually to use a select group of registrars, resellers, whatever the terminology may be. And as a registry operator, it is inefficient to me to be required to use registrars and to treat every one of them exactly the same.
Okay, thanks for that. Ms. Cade.
My name is Marilyn Cade. I'd like to declare an affiliation. I affiliate myself because I am affiliated with all the registrants. I'd like to hear from these two gentlemen how the registrants are affected, because I got to tell you, here's what I've heard so far. Competition for competition's sake. Potato chips, taco chips, peanuts and candy bars are snacks. They're interchangeable. The main names are interchangeable. I don't get it. I thought that we were here to talk about, and by the way, I read the affirmation of accountability of commitments, and I think that I would like to ask these two gentlemen to tell me how ICANN's recent recommitment to act in the public interest has been taken into account and is reflected in their proposals, recognizing that competition is not a word that exists in a vacuum. It exists next to the words consumer protection.
Peter? Brian, you want to go first?
Yeah, thank you, if you don't mind. Thank you for the question, Marilyn. I think one of the frustrations I've had in engaging in this debate is that many of the points we've been making about the potential abuses and the increases of prices for registrants through these practices, the unavailability of domains, has been subsumed in this discussion of competition. And, oh, if there's dominance, there's a problem. If there's no dominance, there's not a problem. And there's no dominance, so there's no problem. It misses the point entirely. These impacts on registrants and consumers are important from a consumer protection standpoint. We believe there's a discussion here that is separate and divorced from this competition discussion we're having, that ICANN has a responsibility. ICANN created the anti-tasting policy or mechanism in conjunction with the registries. There's an absolute responsibility to address these questions separate and apart from the competition discussion.
Okay. Richard, taking into account the public interest.
Yeah, In our view, competition is in the public's interest. We believe that new TLDs will compete with existing TLDs. I think the frame of reference that we all have and the way we look at our industry is very much affected by the fact that we've evolved from these monopoly or oligopoly positions. I think as we see more new TLDs that compete, to Amadeo's earlier question, there will be competition between TLDs. We think that shoe will compete with footwear, we think web will compete with com, and we think that Mobi will compete with dot roaming. So we think that there will be competition between these, and we think it will result in reduced prices. And let's be clear about pricing in .com. We're not talking about $7 names. You know, some people buy .com names for $7 or $8 or $9. The majority of people who buy short, meaningful .com names spend tens of thousands, or in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars. So we believe that new TLDs will significantly reduce the price for those consumers.
May I have a follow-up quickly? Sure. So could I ask you quickly, please, to tell me, Richard, if your proposal will prohibit registries from taking an interest in high-value names and either putting them into the market through other mechanisms, if I can assume that the proposal you're putting forward will put names out fairly and equally and neutrally in a wholesale arrangement?
Yeah, I mean, once again, the issue of whether the registry owns a registrar has no bearing on the question that you're raising. If a registry does not own a registrar and it thinks that it can price its names at $20,000 each, then it will simply do that. Whether it owns a registrar to sell those names at that price is irrelevant. If the registry wants to buy or reserve names as existing TLDs like Asia and Mobi and others have done, or auction names, they will do it. This issue of vertical integration is really separate from what you're asking me.
Actually,
okay, sorry, we're going to have to move on. We're now officially out of time. So you, sir, may well be the last. I'm just checking with the staff to see if we have any more. I'm sorry, Jonathan, you just get there just in time for the axe to fall. If we have any more time, we'll use it. John, can you just check whether we've got another couple of minutes? In the meantime, sir, it's your turn.
Okay, I hope this is a quick question. Joe Cady from STG Interactive and Dot Frogans. It's a question regarding the... it's more around about the scope of the debate, and it's encouraging or intriguing that the question of single owner or single registrant GTLDs has sort of dropped off the side. And I am wondering, and this is perhaps more for the room, is that to say that a single owner or that status or that category, as you might say, is now a fait accompli? It's something that we're not going to debate about anymore. Everybody's in agreement. It's a wonderful thing as long as these GTLDs don't compete in the domain name marketplace.
Brian, you want to go first?
Sure. Well, if you're referring to the single registrant model that came from the Cray report recommendation, my sense is that nothing is really set yet. I use that as a point of reference because Cray said, let's use the IBM model if they're selling names just to their employees. Are there really the kind of consumer harms that might be present, and therefore you have to create safeguards and enforcement mechanisms? And the answer is probably not. So you can go ahead and experiment with vertical integration for this type of model. I don't think that gets the full picture, though. I mean, there's a lot of corporate brand players out there who are thinking about getting their own TLD who might service their employees internally but also want to sell to the public. There might be some that sell to the public, but they control the domain after the relationship with the registrant expires. I think there's a few iterations of that that really haven't been addressed by the models that are on the table. So my answer is that this is not a settled issue.
Okay, thanks.
No response. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are officially out of time. Jonathan, I'm sorry. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to put you in the position now artificially. You're the board. You've just heard the presentations. You've got a set of recommendations from staff. You have to make a decision. Hands up all those who, if they were on the board, would vote for this position. Sorry, let's do it by voice vote. Let's do it by sound. We need to hear you. Let's have a call, and I don't want negative. All those who vote in favour of this position, please say aye.
Aye.
All those who vote in favour of this position, please say aye.
Aye.
There you go. The tough one. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. From your approval, we may well use this formula again. Thank you for attending.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be starting our next session in a few moments. Malicious conduct and new GTLDs.